Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Derek and Zach, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Good morning, everybody.
What's up? What's up? Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. I'm Derek. He's Zach. You know it by now.
Happy Tuesday. It's hot out, sun's out, players are returning to Bills practice, namely Dalton Kincaid. Looks to have missed one day with some knee soreness, back on the field in full pads as Bills get underway at St. John Fisher for, I believe, day number six.
You love to see it.
There we go. We'll listen back to Bills offensive coordinator Joe Brady, who spoke earlier this morning. We'll listen back to that in about hour number two. We'll also hear from Sal Capaccio a little bit later on in this hour. Yeah. Camp is underway. We've got two more days until we have a football game with the Hall of Fame game.
My favorite thing to annoy Joe Callie with now, by the way.
Josh,
you watching the Hall of Fame game?
Yeah, no.
Do it.
The hardest head shake.
Do it.
No.
Do it just to annoy Joe Callie. Come on. It's fun to mess with your friends.
No.
Here's my thing, though, with the Hall of Fame
game. Well, now I'm texting you. At 8 o'clock on Thursday night saying, are you watching the Hall of Fame game? Because this is lit.
Here's my thing, though. Honestly, with the Hall of Fame game, I will watch it initially.
Yes. Like, you are the perfect middle ground.
I will get home around when kickoff is because everything says it starts at 8. It starts at about 8:10, 8:15.
Right.
That's about as long as it takes me to get home.
Exactly.
And I'll have it on. And I'll watch the first two drives. And then I will look at my girlfriend or my family or whoever I'm watching with and go, do you want to watch a movie?
You're going to look at this and
then
remember,
we will turn on a movie.
You will remember, oh, these are exclusively third and fourth stringers playing in this game.
Well, because, and that's the thing, too.
I've made a mistake.
You very rarely in that game end up getting like the really fun rookie to watch, rookie quarterback,
right.
or you know, Travis Hunter could be one of those guys. No, it's the Lions and the Chargers. And, like, sure, I like Amarian Hampton.
Am I going to watch
a full game of what you, like, even what you said? We're eventually going to get to third and fourth stringers playing. No.
Yes, and ready? You are the perfect reaction of a football fan watching the Hall of Fame game. Josh shaking his head vehemently, that's the wrong way to do it. Me?
You got to turn it on at least a
watching
little
bit. It until there's the inevitable power outage in the third quarter is also the wrong way to do it.
Yes. Okay, at least you understand that.
I know I have a problem, but it's fun. At least for me. My friends and I also just made it a tradition at this point. We watched that game after getting back to our hotel room in Indianapolis, and we just, like, that's the night.
Yeah, we throw it on
and laugh at terrible players making terrible plays.
It's just, for me,
is it mean? Yes.
Yeah, but, like,
do I have fun with it, though? Absolutely.
But every year, it's the same thing of, like, ooh, like, football's back. It's the first game in months. Like, we're all going to, most of us will get excited to turn it on and have the exact same reaction after two series and go, this was a mistake.
Yes.
I could have gone out to dinner tonight. I could have thrown on the movie me and my wife have been talking about watching.
You could do so many things.
You could do both. You can go out to dinner and be watching the Hall of Fame game in the background.
Ah, see, well, actually, yeah, because it probably will be on.
It'll be on.
If you go
on
to
NBC.
It'll be on, likely.
I cannot ever get there with it. And I used to, when I was much younger, too, it was sort of the same thing like the Pro Bowl. Like, I would get excited for it, and like I'd sit down and watch it. But it was always that game, no matter how young I was, where eventually I was just like,
the difference
who are
between,
these people?
The difference between you and me there is when I was young, the Pro Bowl, they actually played football.
That's right. That's right.
So that is probably where its difference lies. But I just need you to do me one favor. Text Joe Callie on Thursday night.
I'll text him that I turned it off.
But that you watched it, though.
Well, I always plan on watching it. I do not get further than two series. I don't make it out of the first quarter.
Yeah. It's become my bit at this point over the last 3 weeks, and I love it. Because I learned how much it annoys him. And every week, Joe Callie says something on the Saturday show that, like, makes me question reality itself.
Yep.
So
Navy blue jerseys.
It's my one form of vengeance. because that's what friends do.
Yeah, that is nice. It is weird, though, the Hall of Fame game. It does start earlier than, like, everything.
Yes.
Like, college football, they're starting to get into their, like, kind of summer workouts and everything like that. But the first game isn't until August 23rd, and that's going to be in Dublin for week zero. Like,
right.
The Hall of Fame game is very weirdly placed. I know why it's there, because we have the Hall of Fame ceremonies and stuff. I understand that. It's just very weird where it is placed.
They still don't do enough for, like, the... They don't do enough for the amenities of that place. I really think they just need it. But put more. If you're going to host an NFL game there every year, and it is an NFL game.
It is.
It is recorded within history. It is an NFL game. Its stats are recorded, everything. If you're going to play an NFL game there every day or every year, update the facility.
I wonder if that's part of the mystique, though, that it is like effectively a high school stadium. That, like, we're not going to touch it. We use it once a year. No one really watches it. We just get everyone on the field. It's Canton. Like, that's got its own mystique to it. I haven't been to Canton in years. I actually do want to go back because it's been a long time since I've been there. But I think that's part of, the appeal to it is that it is a high school stadium hosting an NFL game for one time. That's it. And then it goes away for a year.
Yeah.
I also wouldn't be against if it went away forever and we just had the Hall of Fame, like, ceremonies. I've thought about that for a few years. I'm like, who would honestly be upset if the Hall of Fame game just disappeared?
All right,
gone.
I don't need to do this for a third week in a row. We can move on from the Hall of Fame game, just for the sake of everyone's ears.
But is that because you're going to say that you would be upset if it went away?
Yes.
Oh man,
I would. All right. I would start putting up a staunch defense here, and I don't need to do that again.
803-0550, the number to call. We're also, of course, covering training camp from St. John Fisher. And it is brought to you by Figo Car and Joyce, your border attorneys. Buy Outlet Liquor when you need to stock up. It's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? Buy Connors and Ferris, your workers' comp attorneys, and driven by your Upstate Honda dealers. For great deals on the entire Honda lineup, visit your Upstate Honda dealer today. So, yes, as we did mention, guys like Dalton Kincaid are back on the field. He misses just one day of camp with knee soreness. He's back on the field, full pads. Does not look like he's working off to the side either. Elijah Moore and Tyrell Shavers appear to be. But on the offensive side of the ball, and I do kind of want to keep up with this for a lot of today because I think it's interesting. And this came from Air Raid over on Twitter, and he was talking about Keon Coleman and looking at maybe what his stats could be for year two. And Coleman has been sort of a difficult guy to piece down of, like, really what would be a good year two for him. We all know what a great season would be, right? Over 1,000 yards, double-digit touchdowns. He leads the team in targets and receptions. I mean, it completely explodes, right? We all know what a great year looks like.
Yeah.
But what is a year where you can walk away going, yeah, that was a good pick. And I'm happy with where his development is, and you're going into year three pretty confident. Because this year, this offseason has been kind of up and down of like how people have really felt about him.
What is the line that says, write it down in Sharpie?
Mm-hmm.
Lock it in.
Yeah. And so Air Raid put it up on Twitter, and he said, if you combine Keon Coleman and Matt Collins' 2024 production, you'd get 60 catches, 934 yards, 15.6 yards per catch, and 9 touchdowns. And to be fair, I look at that stat line.
Adds in that it should be the goal for Coleman in year two, logging a ton of snaps and get after it in the run game, make timely catches, be the red zone threat. And there's a lot of logic to it as well. Credit to Air Raid on this because you think about it. Josh Palmer's brought in to take a good amount of the snap share from Matt Collins and Amari Cooper.
Mm-hmm.
When Cooper arrived, he played a lot. It's what happened. He just didn't get the ball a lot more than we would have all liked for him to. But someone's got to take the rest of those snaps. Palmer's going to take a chunk of those from the two players combined. That took a lot of snaps.
Mm-hmm.
There's still a leftover. Who do you think takes it? Like, obviously, Elijah Moore is going to get his, but Keon Coleman should be adding to that.
Mm-hmm.
And if he could take... I would doubt that you get all the production. Like, you can't just fuse the two of them together, for example, when it comes to the stat lines, because Palmer exists and Moore exists, and all of them have experience playing on the outside as well, so they'll probably rotate in and out and everywhere on the offense. But if I hear the word 900 in terms of Keon Coleman's stat line, I'm hammering it in. Because that's a good year for an offense whose philosophy is worn on the offensive coordinator's hat or his shirt.
Right.
there's a more than 0% chance that Joe Brady gets an Everybody Eats tattoo sometime in his life.
Could see it happening, absolutely. He seems to very much love that.
He loves the idea of it, and it even dates back to LSU. He also had elite receivers that you needed to get the football, so everyone should eat.
Mm-hmm.
But the philosophy's still there, even dating back. He likes to distribute. He likes to have balance so that defenses have to keep guessing. And that is something that I really love about the offensive philosophy. And if I get a player with 900 yards in that offensive philosophy with a roster of capable receivers, mm-hmm. I take it.
It is funny, though, looking at that stat line. If that truly was his stat line, comparing it to last year's Bills receiver room,
mm-hmm.
it's like blowing everyone out of the water, like outside of receptions. Shakir would still beat him. Shakir had 76 last year. If he had 60, he'd be, I think, second on the team. Yards, blows him out of the water. He'd have more touchdowns. He would have four more touchdowns than the next closest, Matt Collins. But, of course, we're combining their stats. I get it. But it's just I look at that stat line, though, and this is where I've brought up, I don't really know if we're going to get exactly what we did last year, just a little bit more improved. I don't really know if the Bills want to throw under 520 passes a season with Josh Allen at quarterback. Yes, you've liked running the football and it's worked, but your best weapon is still Josh Allen. It is still him spreading the ball around and moving the ball through the air.
You do need, though, to in order to be the most efficient mm-hmm, on offense, mm-hmm. and Brady mentioned that yesterday when he talked with Jeremy and Joe, of the efficiency. You want to keep humming.
Yeah.
How do you do it? Incorporating balance. And the Bills have the offensive line to allow for that balance. They have the roster for that balance. Yes, Josh Allen is the MVP. Why did he get it last year, though? Not just because of narrative base, but it also is because the run game was effective enough that you could not assume that they're throwing the football mm-hmm. 520 times in a season.
Right.
It's not something that you can assume at that point. The run game then is an effective counterpunch to where, do we really have to drop? But it's also, there's no way we're dropping the safety into the box. Josh Allen will kill us over the top.
Mm-hmm.
We still have to play the two high. There is a bit of a defending Josh Allen means that maybe less is more. Can you be more efficient? Still deadly, but more efficient.
And so,
Brady's figured out that puzzle.
When I look, though, at that stat line, that probably tells me he's becoming pretty efficient. That's where Keon was not great at all last year.
The efficiency needs to be better.
But it's the efficiency. In terms of catch percentages, he was at 50-50. In terms of successful pass rate, he was well below everyone else. I think at around 43% last year.
44% if you round it up, yes.
So that's where I see the stat line, and I'm like, okay, well, that bumped up. Shakir is already, to most Bills fans, one of their better slot receivers they've ever had, and they just recently had Cole Beasley, and this is after 1 year of really going. He's been awesome in that role. Then you add in Josh Palmer, and his separation analytics really point to he should be a favorite target for Allen, let alone what we've heard from the Bills GM and Brandon Bean. He's talked a lot about him. Joe Brady's talked about him, and then Allen and him they've started connecting more and more as practice has gone on. Just looking at those three, you can feel pretty good about it. Then if Kincaid can kind of get back to what he was in his rookie year, and all of a sudden, Samuel, if he's healthy and kind of can do what he was doing at the end of the year, it does point to it's a much more efficient passing game. It doesn't have to be Allen willing the team at times to wins. Matt Collins leading the team in touchdowns.
Right.
And having less than 400 yards receiving, it can be both a more balanced attack, but also a more explosive attack. I think that might be the most frustrating thing with their passing attack. It did not feel explosive. There were games they absolutely won throwing the ball. Detroit and LA, they didn't win.
It was about that E word, efficiency.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, they were not efficient and they were not particularly explosive. Keon has a few moments, but there was very rarely a feeling with that team that they could go into a game and throw the ball 50 times and it would work. Last year was a struggle with that.
I don't think they want to.
I don't think they want to.
They
I
want
agree.
To be efficient. They want to keep humming. They want to be consistent. I think that's Brady's ultimate goal.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, is it a little blasphemous to say that when you have Josh Allen as a quarterback? Yes, but I think part of the success has to do with you're going to limit him doing too much. You're going to limit the chaos gremlin that lives in the back of Allen's head that now less and less over time shows its face. But what was the line? Sugar high, Josh.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see it anymore.
No, that's right.
Not under Brady.
That's right.
And that's because there is balance and efficiency to this offense. There is something to, you do not have to feed one specific target. You don't have to carry the team on your back. We have the balance that we can get things going. If there's a little bit of a logjam with the passing game, you can go ahead and get Cook, Davis, Johnson, whoever's working that day to run the football for you.
But now they do have a two-year sample size on film of, hey, they like to run the football and they do it well. That's where I think they maybe are set up better this year to throw the ball, because James Cook is a threat. You do have a better run game that you can lean on, that now all of a sudden, I mean, that's look at Baltimore. Like, they were
you're thinking the count of the counter.
Yeah. Now you've built this in for 2 years. The run game has been working. Now you can kind of go back to the passing game with the Bills. They have better personnel. I think that is absolutely true from last year. They have better personnel, and you can start to work that back in. It doesn't have to. I think my frustration is, it doesn't have to be a season for Allen in the passing game of, ooh, the stats kind of aren't great, but it was okay, it was good. I mean, and they won games, but the stat line isn't awesome. You can be uber efficient and still put up stat lines. And I think they have the personnel and now the film that they can do that. And,
yes,
and it will be guys like Keon and Palmer and Shakir hitting that next stride, that next step that can push them back. I'm not saying I need Allen to throw for 5,000 yards. I'm not at all. Most of those guys that end up doing that, there's very few examples where that actually turns out that it's a great season. It's more a lot of the lines of, the defense is bad and we've got to play catch up. Burrow's season from last year, he puts up a lot of numbers, but a lot of it was due to the fact of he constantly had to. But I think we can get back to Allen being a 4,000 yard passer, 34 touchdown passes.
Considering that he almost got there anyway, it's 39, 38.
Absolutely.
On the team, he had 37.
Mm-hmm.
I will say yes and no. Because what defensive coordinator in their bright mind is going to take too high off the board against Allen? What defense is going to, in their right mind, think, yeah, no, it's going to be a good idea to actually focus a little bit more on the run? That would be insane.
Well, look what the Bills had to do, though, when they're going up against guys like Derrick Henry. They have to sell out to stop the run. And so the pass opens up. Now, the Bills' defense was very good last year, and when that happened, they forced turnovers.
Defenses, though, would refuse to do that against Allen.
See, I don't know about that. I think it could happen. You don't want to just sit there
and go,
we'll let them kill us with the run. We'll let James Cook go off for 145 and dominate time of possession.
I hope you're right.
There will be teams, though, that have to do it because they don't have the personnel. But there will be other teams that, no, like, we can stop the run. We'll let them try. We'll let Josh Palmer and Keon Coleman try to beat us through the air. And that's where they're going to have to show Keon much better in year two. And Palmer, hey, I'm not a slouch. You know, it's more towards what 2022 was, where he had almost 110 targets. He had 700 yards, 3 touchdowns, that he was coming up.
And again, I think there is no defensive coordinator in their right mind wants to focus too much on that. I hope you're right. I really do.
Mm-hmm.
I want a defensive coordinator to pick an entire game plan where they're not playing too high. Have fun. Go after it. I genuinely believe in that. But I also know that in the NFL, you try to do whatever you can to survive when you're facing high-octane offenses.
Right.
And that's what you have to do. Especially because nickel defense is becoming more of the commonplace in the NFL in terms of base defense.
Mm-hmm.
If you can run the football, we're bigger than you. We're going to get after it.
Yeah.
And it's not to be a run-first team. It is to open everything up.
Mm-hmm.
It is to be a counterpunch. Then we can set everything else up that we want to do. Except for screens. Bills are not good at those. Please
screens
stop.
Have not gone well.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
For them,
please stop running screens forever. Thank you. You're welcome.
I want them to be good at screens.
Though. I want them to be good at it.
Well,
because
that's one of those, too. It's an easy button that a lot of teams can
funny.
Just – we can get
they
it
They have the offensive line to do it.
Yeah.
And it just doesn't work.
They can't defend them. They can't run them. That's been a thing for almost 10 years now. They just have not really been able to do it at all.
It's infuriating.
803-0550, the number two call. Sal Capaccio going to be joining us at about 10:30. To get his thoughts on practice yesterday, what he's seeing so far to start today, also some of the injury updates as well. But let's get connected to our fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia. Shop online at northtownkia.com. Let's go to Mike up first. Mike, how are we doing this morning?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Good. How about you?
Good. You guys are talking about, you know, Joe Brady and balancing out and everything. I think that we forget what actually happened last year. Statistically, he ran so much on first down and put Josh in on a lot of second and long situations. There's the two games between the Chiefs and the Colts games, back to back, he ran the ball on first down 29 times, and 21 times Josh was faced with a second and long. Yes, we had some good runs last year, but he was so run heavy on first down that Josh kept on. Thank God we have Josh. I mean, I just think that when you look at the actual statistics from last year, especially first down runs, how little yardage they actually gained when he's trying to balance things out. I think that we need Josh to throw the ball more and use the run as an effective alternative rather than this 50-50 complementary offense. Go back and look at the stats. It's the number of times that he was forced I'm digressing, but the running backs out of the backfield in terms of the pass catch rate and where they got the ball thrown to them. You look at Cook last year and the average spot that he received the ball on a pass was within 1 yard of the line of scrimmage. I mean, how many times did we see that little swing out to the side to our running back, and it didn't do anything? I really think that Joe Brady, I'm hoping he gets a little bit more creative this year. I mean, four of the last five times we did the tush push, Josh got stopped. Three out of four, and then we still do it in the Chiefs game at the end of the year. I think he gets a little bit.
Yeah, Mike, thanks for the call. We get your point on that. On the tush push thing, Allen has to pick a different side. We can criticize him for that. He went to the same side every time. Now, I agree on the first down stuff, and this is where I was pushing towards the balance and the personnel. I think they can throw the ball more, where last year it was at times Allen kind of having to will them, especially in the passing game. Mac Hollins leading them in touchdown catches and such. I think they can do that more. But in the rushing attack, they were top 10 in most categories in running the ball. So it wasn't a bad idea. First down, yeah, they probably went to it too much and they put themselves in second and long situations. I think that was much more due to the passing game personnel not really giving you much.
They were also seventh in third down percentage for conversion rate while taking, when it came to the amount of third downs they had to face, the seventh least. So they were efficient on third down. That means that you did at least a good job on first and second down, right? That's what those numbers have to tell you.
Mm-hmm.
In order to face the seventh least amount of third downs, that means you're putting yourself in a good position. You're moving the chains a lot.
Yeah.
But it also tells you that if you're the seventh best team in converting them, that you are putting yourself in a good spot or you have a fire god.
Yeah.
The Bills also, how did they do it? By run, by pass, they were sixth in terms of first downs by running the football last year. in the pass, they were 18th.
I think a lot of that was due to personnel. They did not have the personnel, they trusted.
And I think that the personnel's upgraded this year.
We'll see by how much,
But I'm not going to hear the run game wasn't this good when they ran for over 2,000 yards as a team and they were sixth best in doing it with moving the chains via the run.
Mm-hmm. And also, I mean, the top 10 teams in terms of yards last year running the ball, it's playoff teams. It's Baltimore, Philly, Washington, Tampa, Green Bay, Detroit, Arizona, Indy, and then Buffalo. So for the most part, it's playoff teams.
Again, I hope you're right that defenses focus more on the run game.
Mm-hmm.
Because then you're going to let Allen uncork it. Have fun with that. But deep balls are not a high percentage play as in the first place. They're not.
Yeah.
It's okay, to say that.
Yeah, I don't necessarily need to see like moonshots and stuff because I don't think
Allen's particularly good. It's a public service announcement. It's okay.
Yeah. 803-0550, the number to call. Sal Capaccio coming up next from training camp. This is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. And that is, of course, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com. Let's go now to our West Her hotline. Sal Capaccio joins us from Bills practice. And Sal, I know there was some good news injury-wise, but it appears in the last 10 or so minutes there is some not great news for the Bills' first-round pick.
Yeah, and very concerning. First-round pick cornerback Max Hairston was on the field having his right knee looked at by trainers and limped off the field with trainers. So we don't have anything on him yet. It just happened. Hopefully later today we'll have a little more on Max Hairston, but the Bills' first-round pick on the field, sitting down. It was during individual drills. I can't tell you exactly what happened. In fact, none of the media kind of saw it, right? It was over in a different area where we were kind of focusing for the most of us. I've asked around, and it was over in a different area where most people saw anything happen. So I can't tell you if it was non-contact. I can't tell you if he ran into somebody, but we'll get more information. I know you'll probably see some video of him on the ground sitting down with trainers, and then he laid down, and he was upset. And, you know, obviously that's not good news. They lifted him up and walked him to the athletic trainer's tent, and he was with a trainer when they did that.
And this is a bit of a sour note. I mean, relatively early into practice, it seemed like there was some good injury news. Dalton Kincaid, Elijah Moore, back to practice. Kincaid only misses one day, and then for this to happen, it's just it has somewhat been maybe not the biggest storyline, but one of them for the start of Bills camp. A lot of injuries to start.
Yeah, so not only you do have that good news with those guys returning, but we have more guys added to the injury report. Offensive line. I'll ask Matt Belva. He's standing here. Did you see what happened with? Yeah, did you see? I'm live right now, Matt. Did you see what happened to him?
No. Okay. I'm seeing the video from Dan Fates at Buffalo Plus, and I'm actually walking over to speak to my colleague, Dom Tibbetts, to see if he has video of what happened. But it looks like trainers are looking at his right knee as he's getting up, and he was able to walk off on his own, which I guess is a good thing. But
well, with some help with trainers.
Yeah, but he wasn't on the cart, so that is a good thing, especially because they would always be overcautious with situations like this. So, you know, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves here. And then I also just saw Cole Bishop just left practice too.
Okay, so there you go. Cole Bishop leaving practice on top of Mike Edwards not practicing, the offensive lineman, KJ Hamler not practicing, heat related. And then thank you, Matt. Larry Ogunjobi with a vet rest day. Alec Anderson has a knee injury. Dwayne Carter has an illness and not out here today. You said Elijah Moore and Dalton Kincaid have returned. They have. So we'll see anything about Max Hairston when you get a chance, and we'll find out about Cole Bishop when we get a chance.
I'd imagine it's you have to inhale probably a deep breath in order to read everything there, Sal. Yeah. But on to better things, I would imagine, I'd like to get to there. First of all, we got free Matt Bove on the show. Love to hear that. But secondly, reading about the one-on-ones that were happening just now, though, as well, Trey White having himself a fantastic one-on-one session. What's it been like with that competition? And is it starting to kind of, obviously, injury aside, has it been kind of skewing toward White overall throughout camp?
Yeah, I just think it's always been White until Max Hairston can prove he can be on the field and know the defense, not make mistakes, all that kind of stuff, right? So to me, you guys know, we've had discussions about this where I've always felt you come into training camp, Tre'Davious White's your starting corner. Max Hairston has to take the job from him. And I don't even like to term it as Trey has to lose it. It's his to lose. It's Max's to win, I think. Now, obviously, the injury is going to play a role in that in some capacity here as we go forward. We hope nothing serious. But to me, Tre'Davious White always been the penciled-in starter anyway for the Buffalo Bills corner two spot opposite Christian Benford. Matt Milano just picked off Josh Allen in 11-on-11. Josh tried to float one over his head to Dalton Kincaid. Matt Milano, great job in zone coverage to pick that off. So, yeah, I think it's Tre'Davious White, by the way. He did have a great, great session. Locked down on, it was in the back of the end zone. I wrote who he was going against the first time. It was Joshua Palmer. He's going against Joshua Palmer. They get to the back of the end zone. He just won't let him free. And then Josh Allen tries to fit it in. Maybe he wouldn't in a regular season game. And Trey just turns around and snatches it, grabs it, interception. And then a little while later, he's going against Keon Coleman. Coleman is right at the front part of the end zone, the goal line, on the goal line, right around the hash marks. And, I mean, Trey just stayed right with him and then just nowhere to put it. And he knocks the ball away when it comes because they're trying to throw it in anyway, trying to, you know, make a play. And then, but Keon had a nice session too. I mean, that play didn't go his way, but he had a couple of real nice routes he ran, made a great catch over Dane Jackson in the back of the end zone for a toe tap at the pylon as well.
Sal, I do want to jump back to, because while he just made a play 30 seconds ago, you've been really high on Matt Milano to start camp. And he's a player, I don't want to say I've completely forgot about him, but I will say, almost like Tre'Davious White over the last few years, the Bills have somewhat learned how to play without him. And it's been good. Dorian Williams led the team in tackles, don't get me wrong. But the more I hear you talk about Matt Milano, the more I see from him at camp, I'm starting to get excited again. If maybe he doesn't ever hit that all-pro level again, but if he's even close to that, with already what you've maybe added on defense, what you have at linebacker, you know, I start to almost daydream about what it could look like.
Listen, I've said it, and I'll continue to say it. If Matt Milano stays healthy, I still think he could be one of the top weak side linebackers in the NFL. And then you're talking about Terrell Bernard, who we know that he is a really, really good football player, right? It's about staying healthy for both these guys. If they can stay on the field, they can stay available. I really believe the Buffalo Bills might have the best, if not close to it, linebacker duo in the league. And that includes a 31-year-old Matt Milano coming off a couple major injuries over the last couple of years who started to get back into it towards the end of the year last year. I thought he was playing his best football once they got to that Denver game. You remember when he chased down Bo Nix for a sack on third down, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, like, he was playing his best football right at that time. And then right at the end of the Ravens game, and then the Ravens game, he has that two-point conversion he knocks down. You guys remember that one, right? And then right at the end of that game, he kind of tweaked his hamstring, and he wasn't fully 100% for the Chiefs AFC Championship game. Not that it was an excuse. He did play, but he was not completely healthy for that game.
I'm calling that Chiefs dark magic at that point. But, Sal, Keon Coleman, we started the show talking about him and how he's kind of putting a little bit more consistency into the practices right now. The last 2 days, he's looked really good. You just mentioned he also still had a pretty good one-on-one session there. How's it been looking for Coleman in terms of consistency now with a couple of really good days showing at St. John Fisher?
Yeah, I'm starting to really like what I see when it comes to that. That's where it has to be, to be honest with you, Derek, the consistency. We know he has the ability to make the flash play. We know he has the ability to, you know, make a play that most guys can't make due to his size, his athleticism, right? High pointing the ball. And he has enough speed, right? He's not super slow, despite, I know, some of the things from last year in the draft process, but he is sudden. He is quick for a guy that, you know, is his size. I mean, he's a former guard in basketball, right? He knows how to navigate around an athletic field and court. So I would say the consistency is what has to be there. And I've really liked what I've seen with him and some of the consistency that he's starting to put together here. I think today was another day where, hey, not everybody's going to go your way. But, you know, a couple of days in, we were talking about a couple of drops. I haven't seen that out here. I've seen it either he's making the play or there's a reason he didn't make the play. And I think that is something I want to see. I want to see the timing with Josh Allen. That seems to really be starting to improve. And that's all a piece of that.
With the pads staying on, well, pads going on yesterday, Sal, I'd imagine there's a lot more focus looking at the offensive and defensive lines here. Deion Walker looks even more mountainous of a person. What have you seen so far, though, in terms of the trenches? How's everything looking there? Tylan Grable probably getting a lot of the majority of snaps with Spencer Brown still out. But what's it been looking like for TJ Sanders and Deion Walker in particular?
Yeah, I mean, these guys are fitting in the rotation, and TJ Sanders did leave practice briefly yesterday. He came back, so that's good news, obviously. Deion Walker is a mammoth human being. I'm looking at him right now, standing right with the rest of the defense. He just towers over most of these guys. I mean, he's as tall as Rousseau and Epinesa, but he is also really wide and big. And you add that, you know, onto that frame. So that's pretty amazing, you know, to see that. As far as the tackle is concerned, don't count out Ryan Vandermark. He is fighting for a job out here to be the main swing tackle. With Spencer Brown out, it is opportunity for Tylon Grabel. It is opportunity for Ryan Vandermark. Tylon Grabel, they really liked last year after they drafted him. He comes in, he wins that swing tackle job over Ryan Vandermark, but Vandermark's still on the team and he has to play in a pinch and he does a good job. So yeah, you want to see that. I think that's really all good sign from everything we're seeing with those guys. I'm looking right now. Is that no? It's okay. It's Mike Edwards. I wanted to see who I saw in street close game. Mike Edwards, the offensive lineman. He's out. Alec Anderson is out here though. He's just walking around, which is good news. When a guy is hurt, and he's out here with the team walking around, that's very encouraging. It doesn't mean he's coming back tomorrow necessarily or anything like that, but that's encouraging to see. Same thing with Terrell Bernard. Terrell Bernard actually was out here a little. He was with trainers. He's off to the side working with trainers. He might still be, but he was a little while ago. So, you know, as much as the injury list is lengthy, let's keep some perspective that the Bills are going to take every precaution necessary with all of these guys.
Jonathan Acosta of WGRZ is tweeting out that Cole Bishop appears to be back on the sideline. So,
okay,
sounds like good news for him. And Sal, on that,
yeah,
I did want to ask you about Bishop because I know pretty much for the most part he has been their starting safety. He may have been 100% as well along with Taylor Rapp. What have you seen from Bishop? I know this is going to be a huge year for him, and I think for a lot of Bills fans, kind of the fear is, it does Bishop have it? We really never were able to find out last year part of the reason why he was hurt for most of training camp last year.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that, you know, the way I'll describe this, the same thing I've been saying, it's Cole Bishop's job. In this situation, it is Cole Bishop's job to lose.
Yeah.
How could he lose it? Well, he has to be available, number one. If he's unavailable, he could lose the job. And number two, if, you know, things just go really awry with him on the field, that could happen. I don't expect that. I think Cole Bishop's just going to keep getting better. Cole Bishop's a really smart kid. You know, played at Utah where he ran a very NFL-friendly type defense to learn all the nuances that you really have to take with you into the NFL. I really like his athleticism. I like his versatility. I think the Bills like all of that about Cole Bishop. So, no doubt, I think that Cole Bishop is a guy that can really help this team. But his number one thing is he has to be available. And it's good news that he's on the sidelines. I'm on the opposite sideline, guys, so I'm looking over there right now to see if I see him. But that's good news that Jonathan tweeted that out. You never know. Sometimes these guys just have to go to the bathroom. Sometimes they need a little water break, right? I mean, who knows what's going on? So that's a maintenance issue with their equipment. You never know. So a guy leaves the field, obviously it's notable, but for him to come back is great. And then, of course, you know, we'll keep an eye on Max Hairston as well and anything we hear about him today.
All right, sounds good. Sal, we'll let you get back to practice. Thanks for jumping on with us this morning.
You got it, guys. Thanks.
Sal Capaccio there on the West Her Hotline. And, of course, I do want to remind you that Sal Capaccio takes you behind the scenes during Bills training camp with Sal's All Access Facebook Live on WGR's Facebook page, brought to you by Upstate Honda Dealers. For great deals on the entire Honda lineup, visit your Upstate Honda dealer today.
Hey, don't forget, though, we got a couple things going on this week in terms of some giveaways. So be listening to the station this week for your chance to win 2 tickets to the Buffalo Bisons home game on Saturday, August 2nd at Salem Field at 6:35, celebrating women in sports, plus a post-game drone show. That's always a good time, I'd
imagine. Shows are always
drone
a good time.
Drone show is always going to be a good time. Seeing things buzzing around there, the kids probably go, oh, well, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And but you have a chance, so make sure to tune this week to win 2 tickets to the Bison's home game this Saturday, August 2nd.
803-0550, the number to call. We'll come back here after a quick timeout. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive X Point Show. And this is WGR. Welcome back, everyone. Quick segment here as we wrap up hour number one of the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. We're getting real close to college football. We did mention the Hall of Fame game this Thursday. And then later in August, it's going to be college football going.
Week zero.
And that means insane college football fans saying insane things
yes.
and making me howl laughing at 9 in the morning.
You were like effectively 9:30. No, this was like 2 minutes before show.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was.
That you read this, and you are giggling even at the thought of me reading this off.
It's still funny.
But it's still like college football is so fun, and this comment being brought up is also because it's relevant. UB plays in the MAC. And this has got to be the most unhinged sort of thing that you ever see. But also, it's respectful unhinged. I forget, like, I don't even know where this comes from, but I just see it rounding the internet right now. The account No Context College Football, so it's even better. But congrats on your 5-star recruits and $100 million facilities, SEC fans. Meanwhile, the MAC is out here playing real football in front of 14 people and a raccoon on a Tuesday night during a blizzard.
You ever see a punter throw a touchdown to a long snapper while the scoreboard's on fire? Didn't think so. While y'all are busy arguing over your frat-funded dynasty, slightly less fraudulent, Toledo's cooking up a triple reverse flea flicker in a game that ends 43-42 after six missed PATs and a goalpost gets stolen. That's not football. That's Maction. You wouldn't survive one quarter in Ypsilanti, which is Eastern Michigan, by the way.
It's just so good. The only thing missing on this, the only thing missing, and college football fans will know this, is I needed this on like one of the message boards.
Yes.
That's the only thing. Like, it's a YouTube comment. It's still funny, but if it would be perfect on the message board for like Toledo or Eastern Michigan. It's so good. Now, with that being said, that is also Maction. I mean, the scoreboard's not on fire technically, but you know.
I mean, if it's 43-42, it's on fire.
I love because
they're scoring.
That also tells you like the difference between the haves and the haves not of the same sport.
Yeah, you have defensive talent and recruits, or you don't.
Yeah.
That's kind of the difference there, yeah. But no, I think though that like you, I think it's also thanks to you. I'm getting more excited about college football season this year.
I can't wait.
And I love the idea of talking about it a little bit more. Especially when
the first college football game of the season, though, in Dublin, Ireland. Again, last year was Florida State, Georgia Tech.
Right.
Be the day of the Bills' first preseason game.
And that game, I remember, was crazy, though.
It was a great game. Florida State ultimately is horrendous. Georgia Tech's pretty good, but it was a close game. And it was fun.
But at the time, it's like, oh, my God, this really happened?
Yeah.
Florida State got toppled right away after being a threat for playing in the playoff?
Yeah. This year, it's going to be Iowa State, Kansas State. Two underrated quarterbacks, two pretty good teams in the Big 12. Both might be ranked, maybe. I don't think both, but they might be to start the season. We'll
see. Paul Hamilton's got to be excited.
Yep. Rocco Beck is their starting quarterback. They lost both the receivers. But
we're going to have to text Paul.
I'm very, very excited for that game. And I don't totally – NFL games I've come around to being in different countries, mm-hmm. I kind of will never get there with college football.
I think it's because college football is such an environment for college towns.
Yep.
That – It feels almost dirty to take them away from it.
I don't even like when you have the start of the year and all of a sudden like Mercedes-Benz Stadium is like hosting LSU Clemson.
Right.
They're not this year, but you get the point.
You
where
shouldn't have like
Las Vegas had USC and LSU last year. I don't like that at all.
Yeah, like if I see a college football game in Jerry Dome that isn't a playoff, I feel dirty mm-hmm. about it. Like you should be opening the season in Happy Valley. You should be opening the season out at the Rose Bowl.
One of the Death Valleys.
You have to be somewhere
mm-hmm.
that is iconic. And you need, like, where are you taking the college football gang for week one? It better be to one of the towns hosting it. Like, yeah. College town, there's nothing more pure than a game day in a college town. There's nothing more pure. Like, even Bills game days, like, I think are the ones that compete with it.
Yep, they're the ones that most resemble SEC or Big Ten game days.
Right, and like it's just one of those things where like it's a party all the time. Doesn't matter if your team is bad or good, everyone's still going to pack the stadium. Why? Because it's their livelihood at that point. Like you're spending 4 years on a bunch of money that you're gonna have to pay off for years mm-hmm. after that. You might as well make it a time.
803-0550, the number to call. Bills rookie corner Max Harrison still has not yet returned to practice since entering the medical tent with an athletic trainer. We will keep you posted on that. Good news, though, it appears Cole Bishop only left for a few minutes. He was back on the field with his helmet on, so he seems to be all set. Harrison, though, appears to be dealing with a right knee issue. Again, we'll keep you posted on anything we learn from that. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here on the Northtown Automotive X Point Show. And this is
some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
WGR.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Derek and Zach. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's very important. Like, you got to be able to talk. And if I can't hear you back there, I got a problem with it. You know what I'm saying? So
I'm just making sure that he's giving me the call, and he does a great job with it. I don't really got to talk to him much, and he's ahead of it before I am, and that's what I want him to say to me.
Bills corner, Teron Johnson, talking second-year player Cole Bishop there.
Speaking of players that have been having a good day today, Johnson.
Ooh.
Teron Johnson's been
his name has
over.
Not come up a ton in terms of training camp.
Yeah. No, today I'm seeing a lot of Teron Johnson for camp reports here today.
Giddy up.
Being all over the field. My boy Dorian Strong is struggling, though, today.
Yeah, I was seeing some of those tweets. And I'm like, well, I mean, it's going to happen. He is a sixth-round pick.
Yeah,
rookie. Not all going to be perfect. It's all right. It's okay. Matt Milano, though, having a great day.
Toughest battles are given to the strongest soldiers.
We'll see if that continues. Coverage of Bills training camp from St. John Fisher University is brought to you by Fiegel Carr & Joyce, your border attorneys, by Outlet Liquor. When you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? By Connors & Ferris, your workers' comp attorneys, and driven by your Upstate Honda dealers for great deals on the entire Honda lineup. Visit your Upstate Honda dealer today. We will listen back to Bills offensive coordinator Joe Brady come up in just about a half hour. Though, did want to mention, as Derek pointed out there, some guys that are having good days at camp. We talked with Sal just a little while ago, and you know, he was mentioning Milano a lot, and he has been the last few days. It is not just, you know, today, you know, where he has a pick on Allen and everything like that. It's just, Derek, I meant really what I said to Sal, and that is I've kind of, like the Bills, have learned to live without him. And so I have been a little bit slow going of thinking Milano would be anything other than a pretty good, fine, you know, and maybe Dorian Williams ends up taking a spot and they do truly move on to the next phase. He is 31 years old. If he, though, is going to be a problem for other teams to deal with, again, not saying he's going to go back to what he was, you know, three seasons ago when he was an all-pro, but if he can get close to that, if he can get to that point where people are like, nah, Matt Milano's back.
Yeah. If Matt Milano is even close, like you said to Sal, if he's even close to back to what he was, I already felt good about the linebacking core already this year. If Milano is able to take the snap share that he usually would, look out. That is probably the most comfortable position of the defense at that point, because then what, your primary backup is Dorian Williams, who led the team in tackles last year.
Yeah, so you feel pretty good about that.
You feel real good about that.
Funny enough, looking back at Milano's all-pro season, I mean, three picks, 72 tackles, seven QB hits, 12 tackles for loss. He was awesome. We all know that. But it does all of a sudden become a thing of, you've got Bernard, you've got Williams, now you've got Milano. I've talked a lot about the additions to the defensive line, and I think that unit is going to be just flat out better. If Bishop, who continues to have a pretty good summer and maybe into the fall as well, now all of a sudden they do potentially have elite players who can make differences on game days where they haven't had that the last few years on defense, whether due to injuries or just guys are good, not awesome.
And yet, oddly enough, they still get turnovers.
Every year they do get turnovers. But again, in the playoffs, though, when the guy needs to make a big play, you know, this is where Rousseau, who was ascending all of last year, having career highs or tying career highs in most statistics.
He plays his worst game of the year.
And so now all of a sudden, if you do get a guy like a Matt Milano or a Christian Benford really pop off this year and become kind of that stalwart, like, hey, when they need to make a play on that side of the ball, they can do it. I mean, look, they gave up 30 points to the Chiefs, a team that hadn't scored 30 points all year for a reason. They were an okay defensive unit that at times really fell away, specifically against the run and on third down. If they can fix either, if not both of those issues in one offseason.
Or enough of both of them.
Enough of both of them. That would be massive going forward. And this is where I've brought up, if they're even just slightly better on the defensive line, and that means Rousseau doesn't disappear in the biggest game of the year, they actually get some interior pass rush, this looks like a Super Bowl roster. I have seen on social media people bringing up, and I know Sal did with Nate on Sunday, you know, is this the most competitive camp that the Bills have had in terms of like just top down talent wise? There's only really a few positions that are open for even starting spots. And that's why I do look at it as like, if the defensive line is better, if a guy like Matt Milano gets even slightly close to his all pro year from 3 years ago, I have a really hard time, barring disastrous injuries, from not seeing this team go back to an AFC championship.
And, oh, by the way, here's one for you. More on the injury lines piling up here. Ty Johnson receiving medical attention from the Bills staff after a hit near the sideline by Andreessen. So the saga continues.
I can't even say it's just the Bills either. Malik Nabers picked up an injury today at Giants camp. It looked to be a left shoulder. Xavier Worthy left the field for a little bit for Kansas City. You're already seeing with Dallas, they had two offensive linemen go down. Tyler Guyton, though, didn't ultimately tear his ACL, but he is going to be out 4 to 6 weeks. No one, it seems like, is having a fun time at camp right now.
Training camp is starting to become this brutal thing. And it reminds me of a tweet that was sent in by Steve yesterday saying something about, like, that 6 weeks between OTAs and minicamp and training camp needs to stop being a thing. And they need to do more of a 10-day, let's get into OTAs, like a little bit of a minicamp right before training camp.
Mm-hmm.
You break everyone in, slow but steady, get everyone the install, and then you get into training camp like 3 days later. Like, that seems like a much better idea. Or like you'd get 10 days off, not 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is, whew, this is getting to be, it's still very annoying to me.
And this is the thing, like they'll still have their summer break. What Steve and you were kind of talking about is more just move dates around.
Move dates around. You still have your 6 week break.
Mm-hmm.
Just shuffle the OTAs and minicamp closer to actual camp.
Yeah, I mean, you wonder how much like some of that stuff plays into it. I mean, this is why they also stopped doing two-a-days and stuff like that. Like, guys' bodies were getting beat down. I mean, mm-hmm. it was too much. Now we're adding more games and stuff like that. It's not helping. We're taking away preseason games, sure, yeah, but they're adding them in the regular season.
They're adding more games. That's what they're doing. That's what they continue to do.
And, yeah, I mean, maybe 6 weeks off and then going right into training camp maybe isn't the best thing in the world. Because you do wonder, too. I mean, like, some of these guys, I'm not pointing fingers at any of the guys that are necessarily injured, but this is probably true at least somewhat around the NFL. 6 weeks away from the team, are you putting in 100% to get your body ready for training camp? Are you really? Are you sure? And then they show up and, you know, it's a hamstring injury or it's just, you know, their body's a little tight. You know, they're not able to go full bore. And so when they do 2-3 days in, they're picking up some, you know, some nicks and bruises. I don't know. I think there's always a different way to do it. The medical staffs on these teams are always evolving. They're always getting better. They're always trying different things. So maybe it wouldn't be a bad idea for the NFL to be like, hey, we'll move our dead period towards, you know, I don't want to say the schedule release, but we're also getting to the point where we're going to have uniform releases as like a special day. But just move them around a little bit and have your dead period a little bit earlier in the off season. And I think maybe that's what they're worried about is they kind of like having the dead period when nothing else is going on. And sports are sort of just like, we're done for the next month. They seem to really like that, but maybe it isn't the best for them in terms of the product. But now on that, though, ultimately, as long as quarterbacks aren't getting hurt, the product will still probably be good.
It'll still be relatively good.
Yeah.
You would like for the injuries to slow down, though. At this point, it is getting to, like, again, I'm still at the annoying stage, but that word might change if it keeps happening throughout the week. At the rate that it's going.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I need to keep seeing this stuff happening. That's the part that's a little more on the concerning side, is it keeps happening right now. It's players are picking up something, and while some come back, more join the sideline.
Ty Johnson, by the way, back on the field with a helmet.
Okay, that's good news, though. Ready? But that's, you know, people picking things up.
Mm-hmm.
Do they deal with it for the whole season is now something that you think about.
Turf toe with Curtis Samuel, of course, last year was really the big one where just he never seemed to get right until like the last month of the season. Then he was good. You know, especially in the AFC Championship game, outside of James Cook, he was maybe the Bills' best skill position player. I do look at it, though, too, and how much of this the Bills being safe. You know, mm-hmm. we talked with Sal about that a few times. Of just like, you pick up anything, like, don't worry. You're not.
We're not rushing you back.
We're going to sit you down for 2-3 days. Like, you're fine. Dalton Kincaid has knee soreness. Elijah Moore has, you know, lower leg soreness or a general leg soreness. And they're like, cool, you're down for a day or two.
Yep. Ogunjobi's got a vet rest day right now.
Right.
Wasn't someone out for heat, I do believe. Like, it was a little bit of a heat
issue. I saw that. I'm blanking on who it was.
Yes, I remember Sal said something about that. So,
but then that might be.
Yeah.
But then we also have stuff like Hairston, where we're now kind of sitting on pins and needles, sort of waiting for anything. And it probably won't even happen like while we're on air. It'll probably be coming later on in the day,
right,
where we learn something about Hairston. Did not go on a cart. I have not seen anything about him going to a cart. And I'd imagine most of Bills media that's at camp would be paying attention for that or seeing for any of that. Haven't seen anything like that, which is good. And I think it's at least a good sign. I think it's a bit of a better sign than him walking off under his own power, that for knee injuries a lot can actually mean not much at all.
Mm-hmm.
But so it's nothing terrible has happened yet for Bills camp.
Nothing devastating.
I don't want to wish that into existence. I don't want to say that into existence. Don't get me wrong.
Your fault if it happens.
But it's where you bring up, like, it's more frustrating. It's more annoying more than anything because, yeah, they have a lot of guys down. And to be fair, last practice yesterday, I heard they went to a lot of run stuff. Well, yeah, most of the receivers and tight ends were down. Like, of course they did. And so that's where it becomes frustrating because I mentioned Cole Bishop kind of loses his entire rookie year because he picks up an injury and kind of can't catch up.
And he can't
Samuel,
catch up.
Samuel, same thing, picks up an injury in camp and can't catch up. So I see a lot of people saying, well, it's July. Cool. And some of these guys will never catch up
and that
because
is the
they
thing.
Missed a week and a half of practice in July.
And that might be, honestly, that's probably going to be Hairston. I think his rookie season might end up being a little bit of a wash because of the quality of depth at the position.
Mm-hmm.
And this might be something that takes him out for a little bit.
Yeah, if this takes him out for a little bit, and then you add in the fact that Trey White has looked good at camp,
mm-hmm.
it really might be a thing of, like, take a red shirt, sit and learn, gear up, get ready to go.
Learn from Trey and Benford in the classroom.
Because the same will not be true for the defensive line. They will have to go right away with the additions of Hoyt and Ogunjobi being out at least 6 weeks. And, of course, if they pick up an injury, that could be longer. Mm-hmm. But they're gone at least 6 weeks to start the year. The young guys are going to have to go right away.
The young D tackles are going to have to go right away, and you definitely want to make sure that they're up to speed as best as possible. And, yeah, at corner, because of the depth of the position, like everyone's thinking, like, Dane Jackson, does he now suddenly have some say on a roster spot,
mm-hmm.
for example? Because I started kind of dismissing him at this point. Not because of his play, just because I don't know if there's enough room for him as another veteran addition to a team where he knows the defense, and that's probably his biggest strength. But if Dorian Strong continues to add value with special teams or Jamarcus Ingram holds on with his versatility or Cam Lewis, the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Jordan Hancock's going to fight for a spot. He was playing some free safety snaps when Bishop left the field momentarily. There's a lot of fighting that has to go on for the cornerback position to where, yeah, you could dismiss Dane Jackson. Now, if an injury is picked up by someone and it's a longish term
mm-hmm.
in terms of training camp, maybe even if it's a short term within the season, well, they might hold on to him.
Yeah.
And it's because they would want to for that reason. Have that insurance. That's why they brought these guys in. And now, hey, we'll see what happens. But, yeah, it is getting to a point where, like, it's noteworthy. It's annoying. It's noteworthy. It's something you kind of want to hope slows down. Because if it doesn't, man, this will look like a year that starts out frustrating and it might end frustrating.
Yeah, because it's one of those things that just it keeps going. They're constantly not healthy. We're having the conversations in October, November of like, well, you know, we haven't seen this unit at 100% yet. And that's not fun for anybody. That's exhausting. That's annoying. And I will say, I've mentioned it with Sal, I think now the last 2 days. I don't want to call it the biggest story of camp so far because I like hearing that Matt Milano looks awesome, that Keon Coleman is really starting to pop off and starting to stack good days. You know, Trey White looks to really have found his old form. But when you're in a Super Bowl window, when you're a team hunting down your first Lombardi trophy, even just flat out just making the game for the first time in over 30 years, and especially with this core, injuries so quickly, and especially with this group, do take the headlines fast because this group over the last few years in these playoff losses can squarely point to, we had A.J. Klein off the couch playing linebacker because guys went down.
Right.
You know, that's an issue that, you know, Trey White, our all-pro corner, went down. Von Miller, our future Hall of Fame pass rusher, went down. We didn't have them. Those excuses only go on so far. And to your point, you bring up cornerback depth. And it's a big reason why they did that
right.
is Benford went down and they had to go Rasul Douglas and Kyer Elam. And that led to nothing good at all. Now they've drafted two guys. I mean, you can even throw in Hancock there as well, but he's going to be kind of a more versatile kind of everywhere guy in the secondary. But they made additions there, including bringing in Trey White, the additions on the defensive line and everything they've got there, the additions in the linebacker room. They really have set themselves up to if these happen, and it's football and it's a long season, they likely will happen. They're in good spots, but you will lose something when starters go down for backups. That is just a fact.
You will lose something when starters go down. And Matthew Bove tweeting something that is kind of painting the picture of how the day has gone and how the week has kind of started off for them. If you want to know how the day is going, Josh Allen threw a deep touchdown to Steven Gosnell.
Not a real person. Got it. Dan's playing tricks on everybody. That's not a real person.
That's how camp has gone at the start for the Buffalo Bills. And again, I'm not worried yet. I'm definitely annoyed. And you definitely want to like find the toggle switch of like settings, turn injuries off for just a day. Just a day. Give us 1 day of respite.
But it has made every single practice
a little worrisome.
A little worrisome. And we haven't even gotten to games yet.
Yeah.
And ultimately, thanks to the Rams, a lot of starters don't play in these games, right? But if backups start going down, if you do start picking up injuries, that is going to happen regardless. You have to play the games. You can't just sit there and go, well, we forfeit. Just notch an L. You have to play the games. You have to.
Like, the Bills brought in Willie Snead.
For a workout, Justin Ross as well.
Yeah, like, they're bringing in guys for workouts. It's like, can we slow down just a little bit, please? That's it. That's all I want right now. It's just, I'm not asking for, hey, stop with injuries. At least just slow it down. I'm definitely getting annoyed with seeing, hey, there's another one.
And it's
there's another one.
Even more to this, it's around the league. Patriots All-Pro corner Christian Gonzalez suffered a hamstring injury during Monday's practice. Is going to sideline him for a bit. This is coming from Jordan Schultz. Told, though, it will not impact his week one availability. But again, it is one of those you miss the key components to building your season as a team during training camp. You're going to miss those days. Now, Christian Gonzalez is an awesome player. He's all pro corner, and he absolutely deserved that. But to a Patriots team that is trying to take the next step, and they have a lot of questions on offense, maybe not a quarterback, but kind of everywhere else, their defense needs to be the big unit for them, and Gonzalez is a huge part of that. He is maybe the biggest part of that. And it's just, it's happening everywhere. Xavier Worthy, I think I saw he went back to back on the field with his helmet for the Chiefs. Malik Nabers, I've not seen anything yet on him. I've already mentioned the stuff with Dallas, them losing Tyler Guyton for 4 to 6 weeks, although not a torn ACL. They also had an offensive lineman, I believe, break a bone in his neck or in his or on his shoulder.
Christian Gonzalez reportedly suffering a hamstring injury yesterday that will sideline him for a bit.
Yep.
So like he might miss a good amount of camp for the Patriots. Man. No, like you said, nobody's having fun.
Yeah, nobody's having a good time at all. 803-0550, the number to call. On that, though, I mean, like, to end this maybe more on, like, a positive note.
Yeah, let's not talk about doom and gloom constantly for an entire
it is good, though, that like, guys like Matt Milano and Trey White, who I think most of us coming into the year were maybe not expecting too much from them. Of course, when you picked up Trey White, you get Max Harrison, and the assumption is, well, yeah, Trey White may start camp as CB2. The hope is always Harrison will just take it over.
Correct.
You know, just kind of this bloodless coup almost in a way where, yep, all right, yep, Harrison just one day is CB2. Matt Milano, you mentioned it, Dorian Williams. He is that guy that led the team in tackles. Maybe he really is becoming their next off-ball linebacker as a starter. But to see them both starting practice so well, starting the pad of practice so well, starting camp so well, it does allow you to maybe not force the rookies in. I know a lot of Bills fans do get very annoyed, and I'm even part of that, of play the young guys. It can work. They can add a pop to your team.
I also think it's a misconception.
But I think it's become a misconception over the last few years. They do get those guys in. And also, it's not always a bad thing to just flat out play the better players. It doesn't mean they're taking too long to get Harrison in or Dorian Williams getting you know sidelined. If the best players are the best players, you play them. I think early on there was maybe this – they're not playing the rookies enough. Come on, get them in, what have you. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't really have that. Osiris Torrance played a ton right away. I don't think he's missed a game.
He was a starter day one.
Spencer Brown, as a fourth-round pick, it took him 3 games, and then he's been their starting right tackle since outside of injuries.
And then literally a battle between two rookies for cornerback two a couple of years ago, Christian Benford and Kyrie Elam.
And they had no issue giving a lot to a sixth-round rookie. They had no issue doing that.
No issue with it. They didn't hesitate, as a matter of fact. Yeah, I think that it's a little bit of a misconception on like the rookie thing. I do think right now it's Trey White's own ability that has held off Harrison more so, because Sal said like he may even think of it as it's just when they're comfortable with Hairston that they'll be ready to cede those snaps to him. But if Trey White's going to keep playing like this, they're not going to rush this, especially if Hairston picked up an injury that is going to last a little bit. Why not play it on a slower burn at that point? Because, hey, White looks good. Trey is looking fine. He looks like he's back. He's, speaking of injury, not dealing with something like that for the first time heading into a camp in a couple of years. So he's the freshest he's going to feel. And also just even mentally in that sense, like I said yesterday.
Yeah.
That's a big deal. Milano having a strong camp. He's also someone that's not dealing with an injury into it right now. And please let that one stay that way, please.
Well, because he's been somebody.
Last year it was, he tore his bicep hitting the tackling dummy.
Making a routine play in practice.
And it, like, I get, like, that's one of those I'm just like, oh, that was going to happen at some point anyway then. You know?
Right,
like, that's such a bad luck play. Mm-hmm. Like, I guess that, like, I don't know, maybe that was going to happen all along, or it's just, that is one tough tackling dummy.
Yeah, 803-0550, the number to call. Sal Capaccio has more on practice today, including Max Hairston leaving the field on Tuesday, up at our website, WGR550.com.
Hey, listen all this week, by the way, for your chance to win a pair of grandstand tickets to the NASCAR Cup Series weekend from Friday, August 8th to Sunday, August 10th at Watkins Glen International. The Go Bowling at the Glen brings the drivers of the NASCAR Cup Series to battle it out around the historic New York Road Course. Tickets are on sale for the entire NASCAR weekend at theglen.com. Coming up next, we'll hear from Bills offensive coordinator Joe Brady as he spoke with the media earlier today before practice. Derek Kramer, Zach Jones. This is the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show.
Welcome back, everyone. Hour number two rolling along here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. We go back to this morning before practice as Bills OC Joe Brady spoke with the media.
What have you learned about the process of this here at camp through your time as being an OC? And even maybe going before that, you get to this point, there's certain benchmarks you might want to hit. How do you approach the process now as it changed over the years?
Yeah, it's you try to keep your process. You know, you try not to let it change. Look, I love coming away to camp just because the guys are all together, right? We're going through all the tough times, you know, getting all the calluses, you know, out the way. You know, injuries happen, all that. It just gives you an opportunity to, you know, you get in games and in season, you have to adjust with everything. And so sometimes in training camp, you know, we're having, going through it right now with some injuries of us having to adjust just like we are in game. And so it kind of gets you, gets your process going with some things that sometimes might not show up as early as you kind of hope that they do. But, I'm enjoying it right now. We got a great group of guys that makes my life a lot easier going through it. But I try not to let my process kind of change year to year, week to week.
Hey, Joe, can you give us a little update on what you're seeing out of Jackson Hogg? I mean, obviously with the tight end, you get the chance, but what were you seeing early on here?
Yeah, I love, you know, look, Jackson, Jackson's the type of guy that you want when the pads come on, right? And I don't know if you guys talk with him, you might get absolutely no words out of him. Or you might not get him to stop talking, right? He's, you know, he's brilliant. You know, he obviously, you know, he's an Ivy League guy, but you put the pads on, he's as nasty as they come. And the biggest thing with him is it's not too big for him. He understands it all. And now, how, once the pads come on, can I play under control and play with detail and execution and technique, you know, and still play with my physicality? But I've enjoyed working with him. I enjoy his approach, his mindset, and I've loved everything I've seen so far.
Jamie, on the flip side, Zach Davidson, we know what he can do catching the football. With the pads on, the physicality, and blocking, where have you seen his game evolve, and where is that going?
Yeah, you can see how important it is to him, right? We see how much of a freak athlete it is, but he understands, like, to play in the NFL on the tight end, right? It's run game and pass game. And, look, there's silver linings to everything. I never want anybody to ever be injured. But just like Jackson Hall, Zach Davidson, with some of the injuries to the tight end position, it's given them a lot more opportunity, and both in the running game and in the pass. And, like, it's as important, football is as important as it comes to Zach Davidson. And seeing his growth in the run game since we've been here has been a lot of fun. And, look, he's still working through the technique. For any of the guys, it's one thing when there's no pads on to work technique, and now when the pads, just the coaching. But he's very intentional about it, and it's important to him. Is that going down? Did you guys hear anything? It's good. It probably wasn't. I probably didn't say anything. Yeah.
Joe, Cleo was up here a couple of days ago, really crediting you for giving him an opportunity when you took over as OC.
what clicked, or what was the thing that clicked between you and him as you took over, as you were watching this team, you know, go through this, you know, whatever?
Yeah. Having Josh Allen as his quarterback naturally makes it the amount of love I have for Khalil Shakir as a person, but also as a player, he makes my life so much easier. He's as selfless as it comes, right? And so it's so easy to coach guys when if we win the football game, it doesn't matter if he had any catches, and he'd rather that than have 15 catches and we lose. Like yesterday, he came out to practice. He knew it was going to be a run day, and he was like, hey, I set my pads. I'm ready to rock. You know, it's a guy coming off a contract. We're down some wide receivers right now, and he's just like, whatever I got to do. I got to go block and dig a guy out. I'll go do it. And, you know, I saw his approach when he came in here as a wide receiver, and it's like he's a guy, a great example of a guy, like, don't look at numbers. Don't count. You just find ways to develop and continue to get better. You know, he got here and shoot early in that year, he was inactive his first year, his rookie year. And then injuries happen. He comes out, has an opportunity against Baltimore, and then he just continues working and his approach doesn't change. And I think some of it was just given the opportunity. We had some injuries, you know, when I kind of took over, but Khalil Shakir is going to just only continue to get better. And we're a huge part, a lot of our success is because of him.
He seems to be the unlikeliest number one receiver if you want to count him as the number one, but he seems, because of that selflessness, the lack of flash, I mean, even the car he drives. There just doesn't seem to be that receiver diva quality. He doesn't get into the trappings of the NFL.
Yeah, well, I think one of the things is, like, what is a number one wide receiver? Is it style of defense? Is it production? Is it how they're being utilized? Like, there's not a lot of quote-unquote true, undoubtedly number one wide receivers, right, in the NFL. You know, maybe even a handful. So just because a guy might be not your number one on one team, he might be your number one on one team, he might be somebody else. But I think Khalil just embodies the, it doesn't matter what I have to do, I'm going to do it. You know, you see, I think it was day two, you know, he's running the absolute clear out route as fast as he can, open it up for Elijah Moore coming, or I think it was Curtis Samuel coming across, and he came back to the huddle, loving life, all is well. You know, we call that a Joe Brady route. Like, you know, you're not getting the rock and you're just running for the love of the game. And so, but he doesn't blink. I got to do it. There's a game against Denver where we got a terrible look and he had to go dig out a linebacker, and cool, he didn't blink and he went doing. So, again, I can talk hours on Khalil Shakir, and I'm so excited to just continue to work with him.
James was pretty emphatic with us that I'm going to play on third down more when he was out here. He seemed like, hey, this is a part of his game he really wants to take pride in. You also have other backs that are good on third down. What goes into that process of understanding where guys fit and what their roles are on third down?
Yeah, look, I think right now it's a unique process because we have such a talented running back room with similar skill sets, but also guys that can both play in the run game and the pass game. And that's what's been so cool is we don't have a room that, hey, this guy can only run these runs, this guy can only do protection, this guy can only run routes. And so it allows us to be able to, you know, kind of do different things with them. A guy like James Cook not playing on third down last year doesn't have anything to do with his ability in the pass game or him not being able to handle the protection. Some of that is, well, we have these guys up. Ty did a great job on it. Hey, why take a couple more blows in a protection on James Cook and when I can, you know, when Ty can kind of handle it? And so, but it kind of speaks to who James Cook is. Look, I know they're, you know, like with the contract situation, sometimes it can get a bad rap. James Cook is as good as a teammate as it gets, right? And he wants to be on third down. He wants to be, you know, running the ball inside in the red zone. He wants to do whatever he's got to do. And we've just been fortunate with the type of guys we have in that room that we can play them all on third down. We can play them all on first down. And so some of that is just making sure the defense doesn't know exactly what's coming.
Along with that, do you feel any pressure as a play caller and someone who has to put guys out there in certain situations when, you know, there is stuff, auxiliary stuff like contracts and all that, and like with a guy like
Cook? No, look, I think we just try to preach here, like, we're trying to do whatever we got to do to win that football game. And as long as our guys can embody that, that's the most important thing. And when you start thinking about a potential contract, or you start thinking that I have to do this, I have to do that, you start pressing, you start probably not playing the way, you know, you're capable of playing. And so You know, look, we'll see as things go. I've been with guys in contract situations, but a guy like James, like, I think you guys see him out here, right? You will throw a ball 40 yards downfield, and he's the first one running to go make a block down there. So I don't worry about him. As long as he just continues to be James Cook, we're going to continue to evolve this offense that it needs to get to, and I don't need him to do anything differently. Yeah, I think you want to challenge the guys as much as possible. Anytime we can take a little bit off of Josh's plate, it makes his job a little easier. Like today, we're going out there. It's going to be 30 straight snaps of 3rd and 7+, right? And then 2-minute. Like, that's as stressful as it gets for a quarterback, right? But that's also why they get paid, to be able to play in the pocket, make those decisions. But as much as we can teach the offensive line, the centers, if they can see it from a quarterback's perspective, they can at least get it started for Josh and not make Josh have to do it all. And so that's part of the things right now we're challenging, and we have the guys that can do it. And then Josh just kind of confirms it and goes, you know, we're asking him to do a lot, and we put a lot of stress on them, and we have the centers that can handle it, and just the great communication. And look, we're going to have some mess-ups today, right? It's the reality of it. I want that stuff to happen and kind of work through it, but you can see how it is important to them, and I hope the communication's at a high level. Just continuing to work on the things we're asking them to work on, you know, not getting caught up on, hey, did I catch a pass? Did I drop a pass? Hey, am I working the technique? Was I where I needed to be? How should I run this release versus this guy? Like, he's so intentional about everything that he does. I think sometimes you get the rap on Keon, like he's an incredible personality, but football is so important to him, and he wants to be perfect in everything that he does. And so, I've loved what I've seen. You can see the levels of physicality with it. But as always, right, you just, hey, what does it look like from a day to day? Can I not necessarily stack days, but can I just, hey, whatever happened yesterday, can I take advantage of it today? And you know, today's obviously a big down for wide receivers, and have an opportunity to go make a play. So excited for it. Reggie is, look, Bean has done an incredible job putting the roster together, because we have so many guys that are a big reason for who we are. Reggie, you know, he doesn't get a lot of love for what he does, right? He's a guy that opens it up for so many people, and we continue to evolve his game as the game went last year. But there's not many teams that have a fullback, be a fullback that can do what we do with him, and then go down on special teams, run down and do all of those things. And he's such a special person. He's so unique with his skill set. I mean, we're down tight ends. He's running, you know, deep crosses. There's not a lot of fullbacks in the league. I'm not saying we're going into the game and targeting him as the primary at the one, but he's selfless. He's like, if I got to go do it, I'm going to go do it. And when the pads come on, that's obviously when fullbacks, you know, are loving life a little bit, but he can do so many different roles for us. He's so important. I love Lecky. He's again, you get two tight ends that not a lot of tight ends in college football are doing a lot of the dirty, in the run game and working technique. And so it's been really cool that we have two rookies that some of that is obviously clean up their technique in the run game, but evolving their pass game, you know, from that. And Lecky has just been waiting for pads to come on. I want pads to come on, right? He knows he's not a 7-on-7 tight end where, hey, just put me in a 1-on-1. But when the pads come on, that's when, you know, he has an opportunity to show it. A great character, great personality, and, you know, you're able to see some of the skill set that he had yesterday for sure. Yeah, I think I might have said it last year when we signed Mike. Like, when growing up playing baseball, like, Mike was just right below me, and like, so I've known Mike from the same hometown, you know, basically his whole life. So I've always followed him, always been a fan of his game. You know, he's obviously played, you know, in this league, in this division. He was such a big part of our success last year in the QB room. Like, everybody always sees Josh's success, but there's so much more that comes with it throughout the week. And having Mitch, Mike, and Shane in that room has helped his game. It's been really cool. This is really Mike's first time, like, going through the installation of it. You know, it's really hard to come in right before a season and try to just learn the offense, basically learn just the game plan as it goes. I mean, he's running plays against the New England game that he's never repped in practice. You know, it's like, hey, just go out there and play football, right? So, but it's been really cool to see his kind of approach, how he kind of sees things, because every quarterback sees it a little differently. And, you know, look, it's tough with some of the injuries with some of the reps we can't, but just maximizing all those reps, obviously excited to continue working with Mike.
Joe, what have you learned about working with Josh Palmer on a day-to-day basis?
He's so intentional about it. He's as intellectual as it gets. Like he wants to know the why behind everything. Sometimes I have to just tell him, like, man, hey, stop thinking, let's go. But you can see after practice, you know, a route with Josh, like he wants to know the why. He wants to know, hey, how did that feel? What did that look like? It's been a lot of fun with it, because some wide receivers are just like, hey, you know, just I'm going to run that line on paper. But he wants to know, like, hey, did I fool with the quarterback? What my body language? How he runs a route is going to be completely different than Keon. And so it's so important for Josh after practice. Hey, if I run this route and I got this DB, this is what that route's going to look like. But if it's Keon, so us just sorting through it, the communication. So excited that we got him and continuing to work with him.
How different is it to have a guy like that? I mean, John was asking about how receivers stereotypically are divas, guys who kind of do their own thing. It sounds like Josh is almost the other way, where he's so intellectual, you almost got to free him up a little bit. How different is it to coach a guy like that?
Yeah, I think receivers just in general get a bad rap. You know, like, since I've been here, we have not had a guy that wasn't a smart wide receiver. We didn't have divas. Like, I know sometimes people can get the raps. They're not divas. It is hard to play in the NFL and to be a receiver in the NFL with and have production. You can't do that without understanding the game and technique and be an extremely smart wide receiver. Josh is just unique in a sense of, like, wanting the communication at an all time and asking Josh with it, you know? And so, it takes time. We had a lot of new wide receivers last year. We got new guys this year. People think you can just roll the ball out and just throw and catch. I wish it was that easy. Unfortunately, we have a quarterback that oftentimes can make it look that easy, but there's so many intricacies that come with it, the body language, how they run the routes, what routes they run. And so as much as that we can talk about it out on the field, rep it, go into the meeting room, talk through it, and continue repping it, that's what's most important. I think the first day we did one-on-ones, him and Josh worked the exact same throw three straight times. Two of them were incomplete, first two were incomplete, and I told him, don't change the route. The route was perfect, you know, so we can't get caught up in the results with it. And so that's what something, you know, we're just talking with him is don't get caught up on it was an incomplete pass. Like, it's us sorting through it and a lot of fun to work with.
Joe, with all the injuries and getting to see some, you know, new faces, guys get more reps than expected, has anyone surprised you?
Well, I think it's really early. I don't like throwing just names out there. And especially the receiver position, it's guys getting opportunities that they might not necessarily have gotten, and it's how can they take advantage of those reps. There's guys that, hey, they might have only been getting two reps in practice. Well, now today they're going to be getting reps with Josh Allen. You know what I mean? And like, what does that stage look like for those guys? Is it too big for them? And I don't think we have those guys, but it's a great opportunity. I don't really blink when we have injuries, and I try to have our guys not blink. So it's just an opportunity for those guys. As long as we have 11 guys out there, we're going to be fine. Look, it's as tough as it gets right now for wideouts. We're down. It's the reality of it. But for some of the guys that if I told them before camp, hey, you're going to have to get twice as many reps as you normally would they be okay with it? They'd be like, heck yeah. And so I'm excited to see some of these guys kind of roll today.
There was a Buffalo Bills offense coordinator, Joe Brady. He did mention injuries there to the wide receiver position. Nothing yet for the Bills today, which is a good sign. They've had some injuries, including Max Harrison, who left practice today early with what appeared to be a right knee injury. Though on the wide receiver note, the Chiefs having a bit of a day. Xavier Worthy went down for a little while. He appears to be fine, though Hollywood Brown limped off the field, was ultimately taken into the training room with the cart. He was on the front seat of the cart from all the reports, so we'll keep an eye on that, but a lot of injuries throughout the day around the NFL, not just with the Bills, but the Bills are not skating by scot-free by any means. Max Harrison injured, Cole Bishop hurt as well, though Bishop did return to the sideline with his helmet. 803-0550, the number to call. Sabres Live coming up at 12 o'clock. We'll be right back after this quick timeout. This is WGR.
Coverage of the Bills training camp from St. John Fisher University is brought to you by Fiegel Carr & Joyce, your border attorneys. By Outlet Liquor, when you need to stock up, it's the place to buy a case. What's your outlet? By Connors & Ferris, your workers' comp attorneys, and driven by your Upstate Honda dealers for great deals on the entire Honda lineup. Visit your Upstate Honda dealer today. Zach Jones, Derek Kramer here for just a few more minutes. No Bills practice tomorrow. They will have the day off, and that could mean that we don't really get a ton of words on some of the injuries from today. Derek, notably Max Harrison, I, during that break, watched John Scott's about a minute and a half long video, John Scott over at WGRZ, about a minute and a half long video of, you know, Harrison getting worked on by the medical staff and then players coming over. I'll be completely honest with you, having watched that, I don't feel good about this at all.
It looked like they were testing the durability of the ACL. They didn't get the cart immediately after that, though, so there's the good news there.
No, but players came over and spent a good bit of time with Harrison.
It is player reaction. I do think that it's going to be something that I don't think it's season-ending because, again, I feel like that's when a player's emotions know that he's cooked, thing like that, you know, and the players are devastated sort of thing. I could be wrong. I'm not a doctor, and we don't even see the injury that actually happened.
No, there has been no video because it was off to the side. It was right. Not during like team or even individual stuff. It was off to the side. I just don't feel awesome because the player reactions. I mean, Harrison.
Player reactions.
I don't
will
know
tell
who was. Yeah, I don't know who was talking with Harrison, but I mean, Harrison.
It was White and Benford.
Benford and I mean, Harrison's head is on Benford's shoulder, and Benford's clearly talking to him for quite a bit of time.
I have not seen the whole video either, though, so that's kind of my operation at this point. My bet is at minimum it's a longish term injury that'll like spill into weeks into the season. So hey, that's why they have the depth, unfortunately. Life has to move on.
We'll see how this goes. That's going to do it for me and Derek today. Sal Capaccio will be in tomorrow with the Bills off for Wednesday. Of course, coming up on Friday, they'll have the return of the blue and red scrimmage over at the stadium. But coming up after a quick timeout, Sabres Live is with you next. This is WGR.
Some people follow the rules, but where's the fun in that? I'm Soraya, and this is Rule Breakers, the podcast where we celebrate the rebels, the misfits, and the ones who make their own way. Every week, I sit down with the biggest rule breakers in sports, entertainment, and beyond to talk about the wildest moments, toughest lessons, and why breaking the rules might just be the key to success. Follow and listen to Rule Breakers with Soraya, an Odyssey podcast, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.